Hello, I'm Russ Bickerstaff, a theater guy for the Shepherd Express. Once again, I recently had the opportunity to talk with Liz Shipe and company about an upcoming production, this one being Sherlock Holmes and the Final Vow, the third in the Sherlock Holmes series at the Brumder Mansion, written by Liz Shipe, which runs September 20th through October 13th. As I speak these words, it opens just a few days from now. As in previous podcast interviews, I spoke with Shipe at a fast food restaurant not far from where I live. My 2-year-old daughter and intern can be heard occasionally in the background. Initially, the interview is with Shipe and Brian Quinn, who plays Inspector Lestrade in the series. A bit of the way into the interview, Max Hultquist, who plays Dr. Watson in the series, and Amanda J. Hull, who plays Fanny Norton, show up to add to the conversation. Now, with four people being interviewed at once amidst a toddler and the general din of a fast food restaurant around 4 p.m., the audio recording limits of my iPhone were tested, and though everything can be quite clearly heard, the audio is far from professional grade. This is an informal conversation about a show with a group of people who have worked together on two previous such shows. As always, it was an exceedingly enjoyable conversation. However, there wasn't much of a chance to pause and explicitly explain things. The conversation opens with questions of the evolution of a third part in the Brumder Mansion Sherlock Holmes series, and eventually moves on to other things. For those not familiar with the second part of the Holmes series, the staging of that particular installment of the series involved Shipe spending much of the performance locked in a chest on stage. That's significant to point out here, as it doesn't really get explained in the context of the conversation. I'm sure there are other things that don't really get explained in the context of the conversation, but that's kind of a little bit more prominent than the rest of it. With that said, I offer up the raw audio of a conversation between myself, Liz Shipe, Brian Quinn, Max Hultquist, and Amanda J. Hull, with occasional added words by my 2-year-old daughter.
You can stay.
So when you were writing the first, you were thinking, if this works out, I'll do a trilogy?
No. I was thinking, please let me get through this without, like, torpedoing my career.
But the three seems like a logical end to it.
It does. I have said I will do no more than three. Three is the cap. Because I feel like we end it really well on three. Like, this is a good place to stop. And now we're at a point where, I mean, it's in a good design for we have this idea that we'll start maybe touring with it a little bit and doing like Sherlock weekends at other bed and breakfasts around Wisconsin. So you'll see like Sherlock 1, 2, and 3 on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can either buy a ticket packet for the whole weekend or just, you know, whichever synopsis suits you best.
Okay. So, in other words, you're doing the entire trilogy on a weekend.
We're thinking about it. We haven't booked anything yet. We have this idea that we'd like to do that. But, I mean, it is, there's a lot of logistics you have to figure out for something like that. I mean, it's just travel, money, you know, if everybody can make it. You know, there are characters that are used in the second that aren't used in the first. There are characters used in the third that aren't used in the first two. So you just go, who's all willing to go for, like, one day of work?
Yeah. But, so you're kicking around the idea, it's not...
We are. Well, it is something we've been talking about since two premiered. Or, at least, like, we've been talking about it with the Brumder, because the Brumder would kind of, like, either bankroll it or be a producer or have a credit on it that way. So they get, like, free publicity and stuff as we travel, because it originates there and that kind of thing. So we're discussing it. It's something we'd love to do, but I don't know if it's going to happen or not. yeah, we're talking about, Fond du Lac is my hometown, so we're talking about maybe doing, like, a test run there if I can talk to a couple places that are up there. And they're typically very responsive to that type of thing, and especially a one-weekend run. Fond du Lac is great for that type of thing, because that's kind of the attention span that people have.
Cool. And it sounded like you'd written they'd gotten the scripts for three.
They've had them all summer.
All summer, yeah, and like towards the end of the last month, right?
Yeah, we did our first table read at, we did our first table read at the, oh, like on the last day, we closed Sherlock 2, and then we did the first table read that day. We closed it, we kind of struck a little bit,
and then we did, that was a matinee you closed on.
Yeah, so we did it at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I went and I did some rewrites, and then the script hasn't really changed that much. We had one or two small rewrites over the summer, but typically, they've had the whole thing since about July. So, you know, that makes it easier to come in on a 6 rehearsal run. I hope everybody's ready.
Yeah, but what's that like now? You're wrapping up the run of one show, and you're given the script for the next one. What does that do to your energy for the end of the run of that show?
Oh, you just forget about it until you're done with it. Generally speaking.
Oh, no. No, sir, I was laughing at Brian. Oh,
no,
that's
more.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
No, quite truthfully, that's all we. That's what we do with it. I mean, I always have best intentions of being far, farther along at the end of a run than I am.
Yeah, I mean, but you saw what was going to happen next to your character.
That way, I mean, yeah, that was nice, because it's like, yeah, I know I'm doing this fall now. It makes it a lot easier with that.
Well, and you were also really happy, because by 2 a little bit, but particularly by 3, it's very tailored to the actors who are playing the specific roles. So Brian sent me a text earlier today. It was just like, I love how this is just what I'd say in that scenario.
It's like, it's basically said, how would Brian be just a little terror backstage? And then you wrote it into the straw. It's like, thank you. How would he go and make trouble? That's right. And he did.
So you were, I would imagine by the time you got to 3, you're very familiar with the cast.
Yeah.
You're writing with them in mind real specifically by that point, and with a history with them.
Exactly. Well, except for the 2 new guys, but...
You're there in the trunk, and you're hearing what's going on.
Exactly. Well, and like I said...
And you're thinking, wouldn't it be fun?
I sat in the trunk, and I listened to the show every night, and people are like, did you go to sleep? I'm like, no, I think I'm a genius. I love to listen to my own work. So, yeah, but that was exactly, I mean, you get their cadences, and I mean, they throw in a lot as well. Like, the script that I give them isn't necessarily the script that's it definitely isn't the script that goes up. There are a lot of changes that are made. They go, can I tweak this? Can I tweak this? And you go, yes, please, do what you gotta do to make it feel more comfortable. Because you really, at this point, and I just heard somebody say that, a writer say this in an interview, where they were like, to a certain degree, the characters are way more theirs than they're ever going to be mine. Because they only worry about that character. And I worry about all of them. But, so they don't all get individual attention all the time. So if they have a feeling or something that they want to try, by all means. Well, I just...
So, when you were writing the second, did you have an idea for how the third would go?
No, because I don't think I ever really. It wasn't until kind of 2. We had an idea we were gonna do 3, but I didn't really. I was kind of like, let's see how 2 goes first. And then once it went up, it seemed really logical where 3 would go, mostly because, and it was unintentional, but at the time, it just seemed really natural to, this one takes place at John Watson's wedding.
And which is also in...
At the second of the Sherlock Holmes with the Robert Downey Jr. series, and now I found out the third of the BBC series. It was like, oh, no. Just looks like I ripped him off. But truthfully, when it was written, that there was no information on it yet. We had no idea that was going to happen. So, I mean, if you're hurting for the BBC one, this is probably not a bad alternative in the meantime.
But this is, there. Again, everything has to take place at Baker Street.
Yes. I will say this time it's sort of, everybody gets moved downstairs and then they stay downstairs. Like that's the, there's not upstairs, downstairs so much.
Okay.
It's just, everybody goes downstairs for the ceremony and then they just kind of stay down there and ride it out.
So, mm-hmm. so this is his wedding. This is, and we are all playing guests to the wedding.
That is correct. Okay. The Baker Street regulars, again, who are all invited to John Watson's wedding.
Okay, which just doesn't happen to have anyone else from his family.
No, well, because John Watson in the books, he doesn't have a whole lot of family anyway, otherwise he'd stay with them or he'd live with them or something.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So he just, I mean, obviously he'd have somebody there, but he just, Sherlock really kind of becomes his family.
Okay.
Over the course of that time. And so it makes perfect, and Mrs. Hudson, so it makes perfect sense that they would be there. And the character that he gets married to is my character, and this is a spoiler alert, so I'm going to put this on here right now for Sherlock 2. If you haven't seen it, if you tend to see it, skip ahead like 30 seconds. At the end of Sherlock 2, they decide that they're going to disguise my character, Fanny Norton, at Baker Street. And so they rename my character Mary, and she becomes Mary Morstan, who is the character that marries John Watson.
Ah, I see. That's clever.
Yeah. So we put me in a blonde wig, because Mary is blonde in the books. And, yeah.
For incognito purposes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we do cover all that. Like, that is touched on, so nobody will be like, why is she doing that? That's so odd.
Is there any small fraction of you that's thinking, I'm writing my wedding?
No. Although I did call my mother and I was like, you'll get to see me in a wedding dress. You can see it like 8 times if you want.
Elizabeth.
I know. No, not even a little. No, because it's a very different scenario.
But you would see where the question would come from. You're playing the character and you're writing the, you know.
That's true.
There's anywhere you could have ended this series.
That is very true. That is true. I don't know. Now I feel like I'm being backed into it. This is the gotcha question, isn't it? No, I think, truthfully, it came from a place of really looking at, because the wedding is where it takes place, but that, while it is the driving force, I wouldn't say that's the primary objective of the evening for a lot of it.
No.
Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah, we get there at the end, but no, it's just more Liz gets to wear the prettiest dress. That's the important thing.
That was more the motivation for it.
Even when she was in the box. Skip ahead on that one.
Hey, that's not true. Amanda had a very pretty costume.
She did.
But I want to be pretty.
But we know the formula. We're aware.
And you got to make your own wedding dress, right?
Yeah, this one I went a little easier on the costumes on myself just because, you know.
Okay.
It was more, there were found things that were altered obscenely. Just, you know. The wedding dress was something that was a very, very lucky find that I was able to alter the crap out of to make work for the purposes we needed. And then Amanda's dress, which I'm actually way more proud of, was this prom dress that we found literally 2 nights before the photo shoot that I lucked out on hardcore because I'd been working on something that was not going to be done. And then Amanda was like, what do you think about this? It was a strapless black prom dress, and I took it home that night and turned it into something Edwardian in like the evening. And roommate was watching me do it. And she turned around, she was like doing something on the computer, and she looked up like 10 minutes later and she was like, what are you? How did you do that? So yeah, I got done. And if you've seen the photos, it turned out great. It looks really, really nice.
So she could have been street clothes.
No, we would have had something for her. Mrs. Hudson is not in her costume in the photo shoot. Hers was still being worked on as well. So hers will be done for the show, but it wasn't. We Menominee Falls Patio Players was lovely. They lent us a lot, all of the menswear. What Mrs. Hudson wears for the photo shoot, but will not wear for the show. So they were just great. We gave them a call out there. They have just so many more resources when it comes to menswear than I do. Roger Bocek is out there. He's wonderful.
Cool. So your role is obviously bigger.
Yes.
Yeah. Than it was.
In the prior two. I talk.
That's the bigger part.
Yeah.
How about you?
It's a little bit big. It's a little bit bigger, but Lestrade's is still the same essential role. I come down. I stand on. I stand stage right. I make a snarky comment. I eat something. I cross to the left. I stand there, make a joke. There's a fight. I get involved in some way. Run up, go up the aisle, go back down, eat, sit for a while, and then I end the show with it. So, yeah.
I don't give away the entire show, man. I know, you know, it's my fault. I know.
Hey.
You know Amanda, correct? Yes. Amanda Hall is here. I was an idiot for the podcast, if this makes it in. I was an idiot and I told my cast the wrong place.
Yes.
To me, because I got confused and I never actually bring myself here.
Yeah.
So I wasn't driving before and I just got confused. So it's my fault that they're trickling in when they trickle in.
She got the 6 in Oklahoma right, just the 70th. It's okay.
And yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Pretty far away. I know.
Same town-ish.
We got there.
Yay!
Because
we were lucky. Brian picked me up early, and we got. Oh, excuse me. Okay, that was early. Oh no,
getting Max.
She's done.
No, I was just saying, Brian and I got over there 10 minutes early, and I looked at the place and went, "This is not it.
This is
not the one."
Yeah, it wasn't like we drove here and we were like, "We're gonna screw everybody up." It was we got to the other place and went, "This isn't the right one," and then gotcha. Brian had to keep Googling until we found the right one.
So you found address at the last moment.
What?
You found our address at the last moment for the
Irene Adler for the photo shoot.
Address.
Yes.
We were shopping at Goodwill and we found a beautiful base with a ruffle at the bottom, and then Liz built this amazing Victorian bodice for me. It was awesome. It was perfect.
And like I said, I had been working on a different dress, but it wasn't going to be ready, so we just scrapped it. I was like, we'll use this one instead.
Cool.
So, I mean, this is cool. This is all three of you were in all our, will have been in all three shows.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's how many hours of actually being these characters?
A lot of hours. I never stopped to do the math.
It's like a year. I don't know. I'm kidding.
It is easier and easier to come back to the character every time you do it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just that much more easy to slip in and out of what you've created.
Yeah.
Now, Watson was pretty central to the two, and here he's getting married. So.
Yeah. The conflict in the second one between him and Sherlock, that was a huge part of the plot. So it's interesting to see where they are in terms of their relationship. With the third. It's going to be a lot different. It's cool to see their progression, their friendship, and what they mean to each other. So looking forward to exploring that when we get further into rehearsal.
Your character has been developing too. I mean, you know, as far as like as an individual.
Yeah, definitely. He's always looking for his independence from Sherlock because people always think of him. I think Moriarty always calls him his puppy or his dog. And
the sidekick.
Yeah, basically the sidekick. Where he's definitely so much more. He's a soldier. He's a doctor. He has a career of his own.
Mm-hmm.
He's always on the lookout for ladies, so he definitely wants to kind of separate himself from that. So that's kind of fun to play those moments where obviously he and Sherlock care very much about each other.
Right.
Sherlock annoys the hell out of Watson, for sure. I'm sure it works the other way around.
And theoretically, this is his moment where he asserts the independence completely.
Yes,
right?
Definitely. So it's very conflicting, his feelings between all of that.
So I guess in that sense, you know, as far as the arc with Watson, that's a really logical end to... If you're going to look at them as being central characters in the ensemble, this is a fitting end to it, right?
I think so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
And it was also, it kind of mirrors the, Irene and Fanny Norton's storyline was kind of, we always kind of decided that Fanny Norton was the Watson to Irene Adler.
Oh, okay.
Sherlock. And so, I mean, you kind of see it mirroring in the second when she's talking about the fact that she's her only friend and that kind of thing like that. And so I think the fact that both the Watsons kind of end up together.
Yeah. Watson's fine.
Yeah. Works well, and I think
it's gonna be like a Shakespearean ending where everybody gets married.
No,
I don't think Irene and Sherlock.
Mrs. Hudson and Lestrade.
That's already married, though.
Yeah.
I was trying to think.
You're pulling at me.
And Mrs. Hudson's husband is.
Everybody
dead.
Marries Watson.
Yes.
Everyone marries.
That
Watson.
Sounds
that's
like a
that's the end.
End.
We gave you the end. Away. Sorry.
Sherlock's dream. Is
choose your own adventure. Who does Watson marry?
That's why didn't? Oh no. We've missed an opportunity here.
We still got 2 weeks before we
missed you.
We
have
to reopen.
Yeah, there's plenty.
The entire thing is going to be
massive rewrites.
Basically.
So, is everybody here who would be on board for like taking this to other venues?
I think everyone would be.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I'm pretty sure we've got everyone interested. Yeah, I mean, we have to obviously take it case by case, you know.
Yeah.
each show, people might not be available, but we'd have to reschedule that.
But yeah, I mean, that's very cool. Like you said, it's always easier to come back every time. And this might be, you know, this is the last definite gig.
Right.
Right.
The way I understand it. Because the way I understand it, like, they were really, really accommodating at the Blunder from the start.
Yeah.
And it was you who, like you said, you set the limit at three.
I think, honestly, if I said, I'm going to write these until I die, they'd be fine with it. But at a certain point, I think you're not going to find an audience for Sherlock 18. You know? I don't think we'd probably find an audience for four, even five, but that, I think the cast wants to, we need to move on. We love each other, we love working together, but you hit a point where you've played the same character for almost a year. And you're like, I could do with a new world to live in for a little while.
Uh-huh. Not only that, but I think the story, the Sherlock, this trilogy, that was an appropriate length for it. I mean, we've developed all the different characters, explored parts of their lives, and now this is a sentimental and meaningful ending. And you know, it doesn't mean it's over, it's just the story.
So you're satisfied with the way things went for you?
Yeah, I think so. This one's pretty fun for my character, so.
I'm just waiting for a Sherlock Christmas special, and then 5 years later when we do episodes 1, 2, and 3, yep, you know, yep. Name these 4, 5, and 6.
Sherlock in space.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe 20 years down the line when none of us are working.
Yeah, it could be like Indiana Jones. Yeah. Bring everybody back.
That's the idea, at least.
I'm getting too old for this.
We'll be the actual appropriate
age. Yeah, I know.
Like those characters.
Well, yeah, and I think the way that they were kind of written, or the way that I always thought of it, was, you know, you're playing a hand of cards, and you're playing a card every time that you haven't played in the first one. The first one was very much about just Sherlock and Watson and their lives, and it was the setup for everything. And then the second one was about pulling them apart and seeing how they would work like that. So the first one was playing the card of Sherlock and Watson, the second one was playing the card of Moriarty, and then the third one is playing the card of Mary. You know, and you get to see glimpses of each character. Irene's show was the first one, Moriarty's show was the second one, and the third one is kind of Mary and Watson's show.
Okay. Kind of reminds me of the early Star Wars trilogy, how everything, the first story is...
Don't now, give away my writing secrets!
In terms of tonality, it's very interesting.
Okay. But it's not like the plot structure for three is the same as the plot structure for one.
Well, we do end with a teddy bear dance. Sorry.
Yes, that's exactly what we do. That's a touchy subject these days, teddy bear dance.
Well,
just saying.
So, it is. Oh, no. Oh, I wasn't even trying to make this political.
On a totally innocent note, it's teddy bear picnic.
It's all evil. It's all over when the Ewoks come. So, But when the Death Star blows up in this one, it's really impressive. It's amazing how we do it in that small space.
You would think that it wouldn't even fit into the plot.
No.
Somebody did point out to me that it does, that Sherlock 2 does end up with like a girl frozen in a box, though. And I was like,
yes.
There you go.
Yes, it does.
It's a swap time for Manny.
Well, I kept calling it the Sherlock Strikes Back. Some people didn't like that title, but whatever.
Some people is.
I put the kibosh on all their good ideas.
Sherlock in Space is going to be a web series, I'm just saying.
They have been asking me to do Sherlock in Space forever.
I'm excited for Sure Sock Holmes.
Oh yeah, that's Dr. Watson
just
with
has
a hand
sock puppet that he thinks is Holmes and talks to. That's the web series.
That is a web series.
She finally hits a psychotic break.
So if you're wondering how rehearsals go, this is kind of it.
We're basically the idea men.
Max and I are
true.
Like nobody's business.
We don't actually really need, you know, 4 hours a night to actually rehearse the 1 hour show, but it takes us that long to get through it. Because this is what happens primarily. I mean, first there's eating time, then there's, well, we should get to work time, then we rehearse, then we have an idea, then Liz just shoots down the idea violently.
Hey, not always.
Then we have to lick our wounds, and there's more eating and rehearsal.
But that's, you know, that's part of the process, right?
Exactly.
You need to. You're all. Most of these characters have known each other for years.
Yeah.
And you've got to pack that into few hours.
Yeah, basically an hour. Each show runs about an hour.
Yeah.
And assuming, yeah, things have happened in between each show. Lots of significant things that you have to...
I started laughing at my own writing the other night because I got into something. I was like, exposition! I was like, oh, yeah.
There is a lot of storytelling in the first conversation that me and Brian have. It's important.
You do it beautifully, though.
Oh,
you're welcome.
It's a wedding, so it works, you know? Like, that's what you do at weddings. You tell stories.
Well,
yeah. Oh, no, it's
but yeah. And Max will try and get me to agree to, like, the other night, he sent me a text at, like, 11 o'clock at night when he was memorizing his lines, and he said something about having a sword. He's like, I don't have a tie, I have a sword. I was like, okay. He's like, you said it, I get a sword. I was like, wait, what? And I had to, like, sit up and see what I agreed to.
Greatest victory I think I've ever had over you. You got me a sword.
Would you guys consider doing like other projects
with each other?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like as a whole though.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm writing 8 scripts right now. They may never see the light of day, but with these people in mind, you know. When you work with someone for that long, you know, you can kind of write for them knowing what their voice is going to sound like. Liz does that for us. I mean, things come out really naturally in my character because she knows how I'm going to deliver it. Just, it's interesting. I mean, the character has its own depth, but it's me too, you know? So that's pretty cool.
And then when you're coming up with ideas, then naturally, you know, it's going to come out as people you know.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. I think that's normal. I mean, I think everybody does that. They have someone in their head, they may not know that, but you write in someone's voice.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. With your own, you know, wit. Wit and words.
Well, every once in a while you'll write a clunker line that they'll read, and you know it's bad when you get to the table read and somebody says it, and then everybody starts laughing. You're like, all right, fine. Cut it. I get it. It was bad.
But the dynamic has developed.
Yeah, and I think even as a cast, we've just gotten closer. Because when Amanda and I knew each other quite well when we came in, but everybody we cast, and for the very first round of auditions about a year ago, we saw a lot of people. And it wasn't that everybody we called could have done the role, probably. But there was something about the chemistry between the people we did cast, and it wasn't just, you know, calling up your friends, even though we did know them and we liked everybody.
Over the course of, you know, we've been together for a year now. Over the course of working for a year, you know, we just hang out in between shows and we goof off and we can play in rehearsal and know that it's going to get done and not freak out. You go on a 20-minute tangent about, you know, Les Miserables or whatever it is.
No, it's nice, especially because we have such a brief, I don't know if we've talked about this already, but we only have 6 rehearsals for each show, and it's worked out beautifully, but even this time, we didn't start with a table read the first rehearsal, we just went in, because we know the space, we know our characters, what our relationships are to each other, it's all new words and new material, like, you know, storytelling, but it's really comfortable to be in the space, you know. We have changed it a little bit.
Actually, now that I'm going back and I'm thinking about it, that's almost kind of cruel. You've got like the closing performance, you know, Sunday, and then just a few hours later, everybody's reading the next show.
Yeah. 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 It was not nice. Like, I'm not a good person.
Yeah, I remember she's like, okay, is everybody available to do a quick table read? And she's like, oh man.
You just closed a show. Yes. I mean, were you not exhausted at that point?
I don't know. It's fun to move on. Like, it's like when you finish a series, you know, a season of a series of a show you like. So you finish it and you've been addicted. I watch Netflix, so I caught up on all of the Doctor Who's in a year. I watched all of them, and then I had to wait. That was terrible for us to do that with a play, and there's always something more. You finish, and then you get to go further. I love that. I actually do. You get a little bit of a break in between the shows, so that's nice.
Did you know that going in to the final performance, that matinee?
They knew they were, but not until like that Friday. I don't think.
Like, really?
Yes, you did. I mean, if you didn't respond to the email, I don't.
But I mean, how she wrote a show while doing another one—that blows my mind.
She wrote it when she was locked in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is true.
That is not false.
Your character was so present in my mind during that show. I forgot you didn't have any lines.
Yeah.
had a little desk in there with a little lamp. It's really well furnished. I saw that box.
Well, my favorite thing is about that box, though. If you go look at it, because I have to like claw to get at it, there are actually fingernail marks that are terrifying if you open the lid of that box.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, go open it when we get there tonight.
The box is very comfortable to sleep on.
No, it's not.
Oh, maybe not for you.
But no.
It's warm and dark. And
one day Brian comes up to me and goes, "Hey, does this rag smell like chloroform?"
Well, I'd say guilty, but I think that's a confession.
Well, so at the show, you've got how many rehearsals left before the opening?
Five, including today.
Five, yeah.
Wow.
We had one.
We only had one.
So you're, but you've worked in this space.
Yeah.
A lot.
We started Monday, and then, like she said, we just jumped on stage and just ran through. We got through at least half of the script.
Yeah.
And didn't have to stop very often because.
But we did it twice. We did the first.
Yeah, we ran it, we blocked it, we ran it back, and then there was like nobody forgot their blocking. We were like, really? Wow. Okay.
So there's no danger of like falling back into like. Some of them, that dialogue from one or something like that.
I'd assume they don't forget.
It's just so different, you know? It's very different. And we've changed the space a little bit. So, yes, it's the same space, but it looks a little different. So, visually,
he's picked up the place for the wedding.
Yeah. There are a couple other things, and we can't go into it too much because it's a spoiler thing.
Once again, I would like to thank Liz Scheip and company for taking the time out to talk with me. The show, Sherlock Holmes and the Final Vow, runs September 20th through October 13th at the Brumder Mansion on 3046 West Wisconsin Avenue. For ticket reservations, call 414-338-9104. For more information, visit MilwaukeeEntertainmentGroup.com. That's Milwaukee Entertainment Group, all one word, .com. Thank you very much. Once again, this has been Russ Bickerstaff.